everyone. Welcome to the Wide World of Wargaming, the 40K segment, and our unlucky or lucky, depending on your religion, 13th episode. I am, of course, Vincent Morgado, your host and leader, joined by my good friends, Mr. Michael Schwartz.
Good evening, everyone.
And Alexander Gonzalez.
How y'all doing tonight?
We have quite an agenda here tonight in lieu of what we were hoping was going to be some true premium content, but we'll save that for next week and let you all ruminate. We are going to be covering this week a couple of events from the wide world, truly, a couple European events, and then we'll be looking at a couple more releases for Chaos Space Marines. Let's go ahead and jump right in. There was, I believe, one major ITC event over in jolly old rainy London, England. And the Into the Hellstorm 2 1750 Grand Tournament. Five rounds, 64 players. And the winning list, really a surprise, was a Tau list from Mr. Mani Chima of Team Glasshammer. Not something we normally see over here. We would, you know, like to call it glorious European meta, as of course they are more knowledgeable about these things than we are. But, you know, we will allow them their flights of fancy. Second place going to Mr. of world renown, Alex Harrison, a name that will come up later. Third place to Drukhari, Boris Mishev, who we are now calling the bad guy from Moose and Squirrel. And fourth place goes to Mr. Seas Jan Stam. I'm not sure where he's from, but he came fourth with a Craft World list, a Late Talk Craft World. So let's go ahead and jump right in, guys. Let's look at Mr. Chima's list. Mani Chima in first place. I'm not going to say we haven't seen this. I'm going to say we actually haven't seen this before. This is straight up broadside spam.
Well, you got to remember that in a 1750 tournament, depending on the army, can play a pretty significant role into what tools you might have for the trade. So, you know, Tau are one of those armies that can easily start overwhelming their opponents in lower point games. So, you know, it is only 250 points, so it's not going to make a significant difference. But, you know, in this instance, it obviously came to the advantage of, you know, this general.
Yeah, more to the Alex's point. Also notice that looking for these lists, the CP count is going to be lower overall because that extra 250 typically means you can't fit in that extra third or second detachment. Most people are going to be working with only one or two detachments. And in this situation, that also limits armies such as Imperial Knights, IG combos that rely heavily on using 15, 16 CPs during the first two rounds. That can give an advantage to, say, Tau, where they only have a couple good strats that they want to farm over and over and over again. So that could also be a contributing factor.
That's a good point, Mike. And let's look at that for a second before we get back to this list. Is that why there's no guard anywhere in the top 10?
It's a possibility. I don't see how you could fit a Castellan in a guard brigade. That would be an efficient good working guard brigade and a Castellan in a 1750 list. You're just going to have trim too much for the guard brigade to be highly efficient. It may be a contributing factor, or maybe let's look, because like the closest thing we have is a Matt Barlow. We have a friend also called Matt who lives in California. We just found his doppelganger. And he was bringing... Oh, my apologies. I'm speaking of Adam Sinclair. He was bringing an Imperial Knights list, but that's all the way down in 11th place. And again, you're seeing six CP detachments. I mean, total list combos. It's really a limiting factor.
I guess we do have to ask. I don't want to run back on an old argument with our good friend Jeremy, but I told him guard wasn't broken.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is what it is. It's a different meta. It's a different
glorious European meta. Make sure you say it and add the proper amount of snootiness. Alex, weigh in on this. I mean, what's different about this? Why do we see guard consistently placing?
I mean, you are talking about an area,
or is maybe guard just not popular in Europe?
40K. So, you know, there's going to be a lot more variety, I think, in the type of lists that you might see. I think a lot more people are going to be a lot less discouraged to bring factions that we would normally consider, you know, across the pond to be less effective than others. I mean, you take a look at the event itself, which our listeners can view on Best Ghost Pariants, because it looks like almost every army list, if not, yes, every list is uploaded into the system. You know, you're seeing Imperial Knights get, you know, 11th, and then any other Imperial army in the top 10 does not have a knight. You know, the Death Watch player that got 6th doesn't have a knight. In fact, there's only one Imperial army in the top 10, and it is that Death Watch player, you know, which is, you know, and besides that, it's all taken up by Eldar, surprise, surprise, two Tau players, and Gene Stealer cult, you know, so, and one Orc player, yeah.
And also
he does love his flyers, but then you're seeing down the line, you're seeing Alpha Legion in 17th, you're looking at more Imperial Knight players, you know, Cult Mech, and then IG in 25th place, you know, and even then, that, you know, at that point, it's, you know, three tank commanders, three Leman Russes, you know, no Castellan or anything like that, which is great to see. But you're seeing a lot more spread for factions, and I think that that's really cool. I think it's just completely meta based, though. You know, it's again glorious European meta. But I welcome this type of change. This is great. Seeing this type of spread. It's not, I mean, it is kind of dominated by Eldar, but you know, as we've talked about in previous episodes, Eldar do kind of dominate just overall. But I like it. I like it.
Yeah, Eldar has so many tools that they can use, and regardless of the point cost of, and so you can see that over again. The fourth place finisher had your typical Rangers. He had a couple of Wave Serpents, but he also had Hemlock, Wraith Fighters, Crimson Hunters. A Fire Prism, which you don't see that often, but like again, Eldar is just so efficient with all their different units, and especially the price points that they're packing. Plus, they have access to very cheap battalions with their Ranger spam. Well, three units max, but still, that gets you your battalion very easily. And then you throw in two of the most efficient Psykers in the game, in the Warlock and a Farseer.
Yeah, these two Eldar lists in fourth and sixth place were extremely similar in that they both brought, you know, I don't want to call it the Alex Harrison Classic, but the five Flyers. I mean, it would not be difficult for us to imagine that at 2,000 points, they would have gone up to include Dark Eldar with Razor Wings. So even at, you know, it seems that at lower point levels, some of the old favorites do still come out ahead of other things. Let's talk about something we don't see a whole lot of, though. It pops up once in a while. Drukhari in third. Drukhari come up as like the default ally. So you can, you know, horseshoe in a Get Vect every time you need it, or a couple of Razor Wings just because they are so efficient against infantry. This is straight up Dark Eldar with Talos and Yuri and Rakarth, who I don't think I've ever seen on a table before, and an absolute ton of Rax and Grotesques.
I mean, if you're going to run pure Dark Eldar, this is the way to do it. Prophets of the Flesh gives those Grotesque a 4-up invul, so that means they're going to be even harder to remove than they normally are. Rax are also tough, tough as old boots in terms of basic infantry. So those are your objective holders that they're just going to be hard to remove and a pain to deal with in close combat. Talos are also highly efficient in close combat. And then you have the three Ravagers, which under the Caval, the Black Heart Detachment, which are very good generalist anti-tank, anti-MEQ shooting platforms that you can hide and by deep striking them turn two. So it's an excellent list. It provides all the tools. You can see why it would do so well.
It's going to be able to tank a lot of the heavy shooting, you know, a lot of what is what we'll call mediocre shooting instead of really trying to punch you out. Like it'll ignore bolter spam. First rank, second rank won't do anything. Even a lot of, you know, poison shooting spam is not going to do anything to most of these.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's just so many advantages to having a 4-up invul save for the majority of your ground troops. And then your heavy duty guys, like I said, the Ravagers can be hidden in terms of deep striking. He does have a flyer in there, which is going to be taking advantage of the minus one to hit, hard to hit rule. And Talos overall are packing haywire blasters. They're pretty good in close combat. It's just a very good package overall.
And it's, if I count here, it's six Talos, which I think are eight wounds each at toughness seven, with an armor save, an invul save, and a feel no pain.
Spicy meatball.
I mean, this list is built to just inhale bullets.
Yeah. It's a very spicy meatball. I mean, that's the advantage of the Talos is that you can bring them in squads. Yeah.
And, you know, Monster Mash, it's cool to see some version of Monster Mash outside of Chaos lists.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a thing of beauty. Kudos to Boris. Who will we be speaking of which very soon? We will be going back to him soon.
Possibly with the same list. I think we'll have to check that. But let's talk about, let's go back to Alex's list, yeah. List, Mr. Harrison, of world fame and renown. With a Bad Moon Battalion, a Bad Moon Supreme Detachment. This is a lot of characters. He's running 5 characters, 15 Ludas, about 90 boys, and then 3 Daka Jets. So he apparently does have a thing for character-heavy and flyer-heavy lists.
I mean, he has endless bodies, for lack of a better term. You're not going to be take out those support characters unless you have dedicated sniping, which is a more prevalent theme nowadays. The fact that he wasn't running into too many Imperial armies may have been a benefit. Yeah. Not many Vindicators running around. The 15 Ludas behind the wall of Grotz is pretty standard now. The weird boys with Mitchell's powers is another staple. This is an overall excellently built orc list. And the Daka Jets are packing 6 super shooters. That is a truck ton of shooting each one of them. That is going to mow through so much infantry and do, I believe they are strength 5 or 6. So that's still going to do damage.
Big shooters are 5. So the super shooters would be 6.
Yeah. So they're going to be useful against T6, T7, armored units. They're going to be useful against MEQs. It's a lot of efficient shooting coming from this list. And plus, the Ludas do so much work behind that endless meat shield of Grotz.
Plus, remember we had that statistic from LVO where there was this something like a multiple percentage difference between orc lists who brought a shock attack gun and orc lists that didn't.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's your knockout punch. The Ludas do some damage, and then whatever they didn't kill, the shock attack gun will.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like probably the way to call this is just extremely stripped down to the most efficient units in orcs, and then he added 3 flyers for flavor. So
yeah, I mean, and the war boss on the bike, as Alex alluded to a few episodes back with that kill claw, is just going to do... I mean, Alex, can you remind us how much damage that thing can do?
Oh, God. 36 wounds? Something like that?
Yeah, he can do 4 damage each with 6 attack. he can pull out quite a bit there. You can do over that. Yeah, I think he can have up to 8 attacks with 4 damage each.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you're going to miss a couple saves are going to go through, but you're realistically looking at 24 damage on above, slightly above average dice, 18 damage on average dice. That's potent.
He did about 28 damage to my Seraptech who already had 22 wounds left on him. And I didn't even, I mathed it out incorrectly. I was like, oh, so he did 22 wounds. So I have a wound left. And he's like, dude, no, you don't. It's super dead.
Very dead.
He walks around and taps you on the shoulder, whispers in your ear, bro, it's gone. It's gone.
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, I said him. It was just a player at one of my local league nights, not anything related to the UK.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you going over this list, he's bringing the best tools Orc can pack right now.
It's the best of the best. Like, this is the best of the Orc Codex, probably.
Yeah, and you can say something about 1750, if anything, allows you to be ultra trim. It's like...
Yeah. If there is something to be said for lower points forcing you to only take the very most efficient and probably keeping us from adding what you might call extravagances in our list.
Yeah. I mean, you're basically looking at the top 10, you're essentially looking at mono codexes, the most powerful mono codexes in the game right now. Drukhari, Alteok, Orcs, Tau, Gene Stealer Cult. Well, Gene Stealer can bring in nids, but still, the point remains that with the alluding to the recent ITC shift, there's a lot of potential for mono codexes, and I think this GT really
definitely, you know, a different flavor of GT from what we're used to over here in the States. Let's go ahead and move on to the event that we've all at some point considered going to and then looked at how far it is and decided against it. The good old Gibraltar GT, which has been going on for, I mean, as long as we can remember.
Oh yeah, man. It's on my bucket list. I just can't justify the cost.
Probably a $5,000 trip each, you know, total, without paying for event and stay.
You can do it cheaper than that, but basically if I'm going to Gibraltar, I'm going to spend a week visiting the rest of the area. I just, you know, going with my wife, I would have to justify spending the 2 days playing the GT.
I mean, let's be fair. There's no way it takes a week to explore Gibraltar.
Good point.
I love the fact that this had 72 people too. And if anyone looks at the gaming hall, it is great. It looks like a longhouse, like a Viking longhouse on the inside.
And it's all gorgeous hardwood. The walls are like the, you know, it's a beautiful looking space. I wish we had something like it over here, like somewhere in Yosemite, perhaps someone might organize an event there one day.
It is certainly the classiest looking gaming hall I have ever seen in my life.
Probably, it's probably a rival to Cruise Hammer.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Cruise Hammer also doesn't have a GT that brings 72 people.
Yeah, touche.
However, Cruise Hammer, our Age of Sigmar co-host, John, he can definitely attest to Cruise Hammer being an amazing event for 40K, and I certainly plan on going this year, though.
You're going to Cruise Hammer this year?
Or the next time. It happens every 4 years.
Oh, I see.
I have full intention of
like
going.
Like the Olympics, it happens time. Every 4 years.
There are some people... Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah. Oh, no, go on.
I was just going to say, there are probably some people's wallets who are happy it only happens every 4 years.
I think that's the main reason.
I mean,
Back to the stats. This one did come out a little more, shall we say, as expected. Top four has three lists that you would expect up there. Astra Militarum, thank God. Chaos Demons, winner of LVO. And then two Drakkari in the top five.
So it looks whoa. For our listeners out there, Chaos Demon did not win LVO. Chaos
Demon won Adepticon. I'm sorry. My bad.
I mean, there is a red herring in who finished number three, emphasizing on the word red. Blood Angels out of nowhere.
I don't think that's technically what a red herring is, my friend.
All right, fine, whatever. Look, English is my third language, and I heard the term red, and Blood Angels are, there's nothing redder than Blood Angels, okay? So,
all right, just let him shoehorn that in.
Yeah, thank you.
just with that caveat that is not the traditional definition of a red herring.
All right.
Well, for our listeners out there, the top three were Boris Mishev. With part of the Bad Moons Cafe Club with Dark Eldar. I hate saying Drukhari or Bacardi, whatever.
It's the same list. I just checked it out. It's identical.
It is identical.
It's identical. Yeah.
Yep. And number two was Adrian Bonal with Astra Militarum. And in third place, we did have Joseph M. with his Blood Angels.
Dude. I believe that is pronounced Moscardini.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Dude, Boris is living his life. I mean, GT in London.
Boris is out here putting in work with his Dark Eldar.
Boris, can you...
He's going international. He's the international man of mystery on this.
Yeah, seriously. Oh my.
He is the other half of the Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
We just need to find the British player who's doing this well. Absolutely. Alex Harrison and Boris Mishev as... the 40K players from U.N.C.L.E.
I mean, if
this is my new mission to Hollywood, we will make it happen.
If Boris starts showing up in like South Korean GTs in a couple years, I'm going to try to find him and ask him, what is your life that allows you to do this?
But like we said, this is the exact same list that he took to the Hellstorm GT. So I have a feeling if we were to look back over the months, this list has been working far longer than 2 weeks.
Probably.
I have that feeling.
But if anything, it means that he's got a lot of practice. GTF, right back GT. Oh, man, that must be a disorienting couple of weeks.
Now, you know, it'd be great to have a European TO on sometime in the future, because I'm curious, because this is also another 1750 tournament.
It would be interesting to see why they choose 1750 against 2K. Maybe it's just to keep the round shorter.
I mean, if anything,
maybe.
Yeah, because 1750 plays out about a good 20-25 minutes faster than 2000.
That's not instant. I mean, that's an hour shorter tournament.
Either that, or it means that if you're keeping the same run time at 2:45, 3 hours, and you're guaranteeing everything goes to.
Hey, can we? Hate to interrupt. Sorry, Michael, but I noticed that second place guy. He has a fantastic army list. It is, you know, of course, it is IG. It's got elite choices from two astropaths. He's got a few infantry squads and two company commanders and a battalion. He then has a super heavy detachment with two Banehammers and a Macarius Vulcan. My.
So a lot of people do not know what a Macarius is. Their fluff is that they are essentially demi Baneblades. They're a little bit smaller. They don't carry as many guns, but the guns they carry are essentially Baneblade caliber. And the reason it's called the Macarius Vulcan is it carries a Vulcan, what's it called? Megabolter on it.
Nice. Yep.
And then the Banehammers, I may have to consult my codex. Alex, tread water on the rest of his list for me.
Well, you know, that was pretty much the long and short of his list. He just had a battalion, and then he had the two Banehammers and Mercurius, just like Vince mentioned.
He's got an assassin. He's got the 85 points to request a specific assassin so he can pick and choose whichever assassin he wants. He has got reinforcements, 85 points, Officio Assassinarum. So we're going to start seeing that a lot, I feel, for Imperial.
So I was able to find the Banehammer whenever you guys are ready.
Real quick, Michael, I noticed that his team name is in French. What does that mean?
The Cadets of Gascon, isn't it?
Yeah. It's
I speak
basically the
Cadets I speak of, French, damn
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's the Cadets of Gascon. And Gascon France. Is a
it's town northern France, if I remember in, correctly.
Well, France, obviously. But yeah, I'm looking up the region.
Well, in the meantime, while he's doing his geography research, I do have the Banehammer here in front of me. So it is 26 wounds at strength 9, toughness 8, as per usual with a Baneblade. The Tremor Cannon is heavy, 3d6 shots, strength 8, minus 2 AP, straight 3 damage. If a unit is hit by this weapon in their following movement phase, they have their movement characteristic and cannot advance. So that's a problem. I think the way to put that is that if you get hit by a Tremor Cannon, you're going to keep getting hit by the Tremor Cannon because the tank then moves faster than you. So
that's pretty impressive. Also, he is from Gascon is where he's from. He is from the south of France.
My mistake. The thing about the Banehammer. Let me just real quick. It has a transport capacity of 25.
Oh, gee. I wonder what he can do with that.
Well, what he can do is basically put his entire list in them both. Because I'm going to count here. 1, 2, 3 squads of infantry, 4 characters, and then the 3 tanks. He can drop his entire list in 3.
Or 4 with the reinforcements of the Officio Assassinarum.
Depending on when you bring it in, correct. But yeah, so he's going to have an advantage on the plus one. Are going to have a lot of trouble doing any damage to his units, barring, you know, las cannons. The Baneblades are going to have a 2-up save with the prepared defenses stratagem. And he does have 10 command points. And of course, he brought the Aquila. So, yeah, I think I see how this worked out, guys.
I mean, he needed to pray he didn't run into a Castellan, because a Castellan would eat those things for breakfast.
I would hesitate to make that assertion, especially when a Castellan only moves 7 inches a turn.
Yeah, but the range on that thing is crazy.
The range on the Banehammer is 60.
Yeah, the Castellan's range is also 60 on its big gun.
Yeah, but the Castellan has an invul save.
Yeah, the Castellan has an invul save, and it's going to munch away at this thing.
The Banehammers also have quad, let me say this again, quad las cannons.
That's all fine and dandy, Boone. You don't have an invul save. You don't have an invul save.
I mean, fair enough. Do you guys do remember one of the stratagems for Vestroians is that one of their vehicles can fire as though it is at its highest wounds level?
Yeah, that's a good point. No, it's a good point. I mean, if you invest the right CP into this into these babies, they're going to be hard to kill. You basically got to kill them in order for them to lose efficiency. Yeah.
He also is, of course, carrying the two astropaths with Night Shroud and Psychic Barrier, meaning he can technically give one of them a one-up on its first turn and the other one at minus one.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
so probably how he's going to handle how he handled Knights, is just going, go ahead, dude. Your shooting is going to be less efficient than mine, and I have two Bane Blades and you have one Knight. Good luck.
It's a potent list.
Those are bricks.
Yeah. No,
Banehammers have been easily one of the most underrepresented of the Baneblade chassis. Probably just because nobody knows what the gun looks like.
Yeah. No,
that's why I would guess that a lot of people were quite unhappy playing Mr. Banal's list because they just couldn't do any damage.
You know what? Good point. You may have won me over on that one.
It doesn't happen very often, me telling you something about 40K, but Alex, what would you do against double Baneblade Macarius?
Bane.
Well, you know, what's the strength on the big gun?
Eight.
Strength.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on what list I'd be bringing. Right, lately, I've been bringing that dumb, gimmicky Necron list that just happens to be winning if you go first. And if you don't go first, you basically lose. So it's dumb.
I'm half laughing, half crying because you spit it with such venom.
Oh, dude, for sure.
You're like, I'm playing this, but I don't enjoy it at all. Like, this sucks.
I have my Serap Tech all primed up, and I'm doing a very particular paint scheme on it, which is going to take some time. So he's in the hangar for now. So until I bust him out, I would honestly do that. I would bring... In reality, what I want to do is have the quickest games possible for Necrons and just bring what that individual at the Florida tournament a few months ago brought, where he brought like one auxiliary elite choice for a Triox Stalker and then just three Sereptech heavy constructs. And that was his army. It was just like a bunch of spindly legs. And that was his 2,000 points, four models. Ooh. That's what I would want to do. Because I want to be like, sweet, like, you can handle Castellans, but these are three Castellans that have a 5-up save always, 5-up invul always.
Ooh, yeah.
And happen to have the killing power of a Gallant at the same time. So, like ideally...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, ideally, that's what I would be running. So, ideally, that's what I would want to run against this list. Is just be like, I have four models. You're going to beat me on objectives, but you have a minimum. You know, he basically has three super heavies and then a minimum guard battalion. So, in a lot of missions, especially for utilizing ITC missions, he's going to have some trouble getting to the objectives on the other side of the board. So, his strategy essentially is to stick on his objectives and then kill the opponent off their objectives, which does get a little tricky in some missions, which is probably what might have lost him his first place.
Yeah, maybe. You know, do we know what the missions were for this GT, Vince?
We unfortunately do not. I do not believe this was an ITC event. It looks like it was one of the truly independent events.
Yeah,
It is now outside the tournament circuit of the mainstream tournament circuit, but still, so it looks like it was a heck of an event if that play space is anything to go by. Yeah. And with the, you know, tourist attraction that Gibraltar is, even if you lost in the first 10 minutes, you could just go walk around and probably find some stuff to do.
Yeah, I know. I went to the museum. It was a lovely experience after it got destroyed. Oh, my God.
And it is always nice when there's extracurricular activities.
Oh, always lovely. Especially that doesn't...
Usually beer is involved, but I'm not sure what they serve. This place, they probably don't serve beer. This is probably one of those where they were sipping red wine between between rounds.
This is still a former artillery regiment fort. I bet they're drinking whiskey. Just throwing it out there.
All right, fair enough. All right, we do want to jump into one more event. So by our count, Drukhari and Eldar seem to be coming out ahead. You know, well, Eldar in general seem to be dominating a lot of the European events. So kudos to them in the glorious European meta.
Woo!
But let's look at the last one coming all the way from Scotland, the Great North, that isn't Canada. Armacon 2019. What do we got here?
They were drinking Scotch there, I bet you.
They were 100. They were drinking everything there. Let's be perfectly clear. There is no way there was any limitation on alcohol at this event.
I hope not. That would be a crime. All right. Let's bring up this bad boy.
All of us tapping frantically through BCP. So 40 attendees, five round Nova style mission specifically. Coming up first place through fifth place, Katashin Jungle Fighter, so guard. Tau Empire again, so second place, following the fine lead of Mr. Chima from the Into the Hellstorm, and then World Eaters and Drukhari.
Oh, wow.
World Eaters specifically into. Oh, it's Khorne Berserkers.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah,
six units of five Khorne Berserkers with two Bloodthirsters of Insensate Rage and a Dark Apostle. I love this list. I love everything about it. yeah. So exactly how many turns after the first do you think he spent in his deployment zone?
Not.
Zero.
Unless it was a dare. I dare you, you can only keep, like, I dare you that you'll only keep one unit here. It's like, fine.
Well, no.
That's what Vince used to do. Vince used to do stuff in games and be like, do this. I bet you won't. I dare you to do this. I dare you to do this. Like, he's like, I dare you to make a bad move in this game because you won't. You won't. And it's just like, Vince, of course I'm not going to make that move.
You only say that because eventually you learn to stop doing it.
I mean, yeah, but
that's
fair. Psychological warfare, tale as old as time. But the I did find he probably did have three units in his deployment zone. He did bring 3x3 Nurglings for a minimum, you know, generic demon.
Oh, that's exactly what was in his deployment zone.
Yeah, that's it. That's the only thing. Everything else was, you know. 12-inch or a 10-inch move on the Rhino, or 14-inch move on the Rhinos, turbo boost forward, hope they don't die, and then the Khorne Berserkers charge everything inside.
Yeah, it's a click and play.
Rinse,
it's
repeat.
A click and play list. I mean, you can play this thing hungover. Oh, wow. I just realized something. I've been playing the wrong list in freaking GTs, guys.
Yeah, you'd never want to have anything too complicated second day. Oh, well. Guys, we were hoping that the glorious European meta would save us from this, but unfortunately, it hasn't. Mr. I'm going to really try my best here. Emil Espergren, with his Katashin Jungle Fighters, unfortunately did bring 2K of Imperial Guard and the necessary Knight Castellan with Shieldbreaker Cannon, Siegebreaker Cannons.
Well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean,
but he also brought... Wow, he brought a Supreme Command Detachment of Triple Custodes on jet bikes. This was maximum cheese.
I mean, yeah, no, I can't justify that.
this is, I mean, he brought everything: 3x3 mortars, the Castellan, and the Custodes jet bikes.
You know, you don't really see a lot of the Custodes jet bikes anymore, so it's interesting that he brought them.
I mean, they're really good against hordes. They're so efficient against hordes with their shooting.
Yeah, he doesn't have any artillery, so, you know, like where normally you would see the Emperor's Wrath Artillery Company, I think that's probably where the Custodes jet bikes come in.
Yeah, and plus they're pretty beastly in close combat. I mean, right. They're an excellent all-around unit, to be frank. Just there, they have the ultimate package. I'm in love with them. I gotta stop oozing over this. I gotta convince myself not to buy another army. Anyway, moving on. What was I talking about? Vince, help me, please.
Well, sure. He brought a detachment that most people don't see. He brought one of the Guard Vigilance detachments, but it wasn't tanks and it wasn't artillery. It was the Emperor's Conclave. So all Imperial Guardsmen reroll once to hit within 6 inches of the Warlord, Strachan, and then they roll two dice and pick the lowest for leadership tests. So this is, and there's more. Apparently, they gain a stratagem. A model from the slain from a target unit can pile in and fight before it is removed. He did bring priests. So this essentially is a close combat guardsman army?
Yeah, I mean, why not? It's so good with the combos. It's with the Cajuns being strength 4, you got the priests, you got Strachan, plus with this detachment, their CC ability is pretty freaking potent. And then you have the Castellan.
Is that 3 attacks at strength 4, rerolling ones?
Yeah.
Per unit?
Yeah, it is.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's decent even by Marine standards. No, that's better than,
Marine standards.
Assault Marines.
It's better than Marine standards, and that's the point. You're paying 5 points a freaking model, and all of, and anything they touch in numbers is going to be taken down in close combat. And then for those things that can't be killed by the massive strength 4 attacks, the Castellan's there to shoot them away. It's a really good combo.
Right. Yeah, and he did, of course, bring a brigade, plus the 2 smaller detachments, so he did have, I think I count, 17 command points. No Aquila, though.
I mean, ever since...
He didn't bring the Aquila.
Ever since the ruling with you can only regenerate 6 command points back, focusing on the brigade, on spamming initial command points is more beneficial. What's the relic that he did put on Strachan or another close combat?
Well, Strachan can't take a relic. He is a unique character.
What's the relic that he did end up choosing?
I don't see one.
That can't be right.
So it may have just been, maybe they do things different in the glorious European meta where you're allowed not to name it until, oh, you know what he did? He spent the relics on his shield captains.
Oh, to get them 3 up in vault.
The Eagle's Eye and the Auric Aquila.
So he's got his shield captains are running around with the 3 up invul each. So they're a pain in the tuckus to remove. And that's an excellent option to take.
It's a really good way to shield your very squishy guardsmen from Overwatch too.
Oh, I didn't say it this time.
we have trained you.
I concur, Vince. Yeah, it's an excellent.
Your training is complete.
Yes, I have moved on to the next level. It's looking at this list overall, it has all the tools. It's going to blend through, quite frankly, anything it touches.
I don't know if blender is the right word for this list. It's going to be a slow crawl.
Okay, it's going to...
But it will grind with you, and you will probably crack.
It is a Russian army circa 1945, as a steamroll stores Berlin-style army. How about that?
It's 11 units of guardsmen.
Yeah.
Damn. Normally with a battalion, you see 6 minimum, or with a brigade, you see 6 minimum, and stop. Not with this gentleman.
Well, with the close combat efficiency, why would you not spam as many as you could?
Yeah, that's true. Let's move on to second place breakdown, Mr. Adam Kiesel. I am not even going to try. Solomslo? I apologize to the gentleman. This looks like a little more, shall we say, conventional. Mm-hmm. Cadre Fireblades. Not as many. No commit. 1 commander, and it's only Shadow Sun.
Only one.
Yeah, just the one. But he did bring 3 units of 2 broadsides. No, 3 units of 2 broadsides and 3 riptides. So it is Monster Mash, but he has a lot of infantry. I would be interested to see the mission pack for this event. This seems like it's very infantry focused on the top 2 lists. And even the World Eaters list.
But you've seen that shift in the meta already happen. Adepticon had a ton of Horde lists. And
Adepticon uses very strange missions.
All right, touche. But LVO, you were also starting to see that transition where you had several large bodyguard lists. The orcs were starting to make the presence felt. Gene Stealers are starting to make the presence felt. I mean, yeah, MEQs are suffering right now in the meta. So why wouldn't you bring tons and tons of bodies that are super efficient for the point cost?
That's true. That is true.
And for the
I'm going to jump down to a couple others and see if there's anything else we can glean from these lists.
Yeah.
And the only Drukhari list was almost Drukhari pure. Looks like the only things he had that weren't were two Farseers and, of course, the ubiquitous five-man Ranger unit, so a patrol.
Oh, man, those Rangers are so freaking good. Rangers have never seen so much work in their entire lives.
No, even back
when, right?
Putting even in when Flitdar were good, there weren't this many Rangers running around.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of ridiculous. It just...
There weren't any Rangers. Yeah.
Does anyone remember when there were elites? FYI. Back in like 30...
They were... No. All the Pathfinders were Rangers is what it was. You had to buy the upgrade, remember?
Yeah, touche. My apologies. Sorry for the fake news, everyone. Rangers were so rare up until this edition.
This is interesting. The like I said, I just wanted to look to see if there was anything strange. The fifth place gentleman, whose name I will not attempt, ran an absolute ton of witches. I mean, 16. I can't count 37 witches and two succubuses. Two succubi.
Nice. Witches are one of those things that are very efficient if you can get them into close combat. They also, on a fora, prevent you from leaving close combat, which can be devastating for a ton of shooting armies.
Didn't Sean Naden run witches a couple months ago?
I believe so. I just cannot remember the tournament. But they're a fairly potent unit if done correctly. The only problem is if you get them out in the open, they're not in close combat. They're just going to get mauled by anything that looks at them twice. They have a pitiful save. It's a 6+.
Didn't he run it in one of his lists that he came, I think, second or third? It was one of the things we suspected he was going to take to LVO because he was experimenting with it. And then we looked it up and they had some kind of special rule against units in cover?
I actually do not remember this at all.
I seem to remember... I'm going to look up the Cabal they're using, the Cult of the Cursed Blade.
Oh my.
All right, let's see. Oh my. This is interesting. Looks like I don't see it in their gear, but this is an interesting rule that if he used it, could explain why he did. Cult of the Cursed Blade, roll a d6. If the bearer is slain in the fight phase, on a 2+, the unit that killed this model suffers d6 mortal wounds after it finished making all of its attacks.
Very nice. Yeah, that's great.
So you could throw a succubus at a knight and just to try to finish it. This is an interesting list. I would like to talk to this guy.
Well, you can always reach out. That would be fantastic. Yeah,
we can and we might, because we may have to find out why Drukhari are so much more popular in Europe than here. Let's jump last into the Chaos Space Marines Tactica article we got from Warhammer Community this week, and they did finally give us a hint on the Alpha Legion, which we should have seen coming. They are the ubiquitous: your opponent must subtract one from hit rolls to target units if they are more than 12 inches away. Kind of disappointing, more than a little derivative, but it is a dice game and most of the rules should revolve around modifying those dice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's only so much to be expected.
All right. I'm back.
Well, I mean, what you would think the Alpha Legion, they could have done something a little different, like some kind of morale effect.
Morale effect for enemy units.
No.
Even then,
was that the Night Lords?
It's expected that you're not going to see much of a change from the codex, from the first 8th edition codex to the second 8th edition codex for Chaos Space Marines. None of this should have been a surprise.
Fair. I was just hoping, I do have a soft spot in my heart for the Alpha Legion. I was a believer in the 40K version of the Great Northern Conspiracy where the Alpha Legion were going to show up Acadia and turn on Chaos, which I thought would have been a cool story twist.
I appreciate that reference.
You're welcome. I know you, I think you were a believer in the Great Northern Conspiracy as well.
We all are.
Not a 40K, but in the books.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. But, there's a lot of real interesting stuff that we can still do with the Chaos Space Marine book. And I do appreciate that Games Workshop is, you know, giving examples of some of the more, let's call them strategic aspects of certain combinations, like, you know, endless cacophony on things like Havocs and Obliterators, or even utilizing things like Shroud of Flies on Obliterators themselves, you know, since that's going to add two to their saving throw rolls instead of, you know, one if, you know, when they do receive the benefit of cover near.
I concur with Alex.
Yeah, Endless Cacophony is a pretty serious stratagem, especially, is this a reason maybe to take Slaaneshi Terminators?
Nope. It's an excuse to make Slaaneshi Havocs.
Okay, that works too. Any particular reason?
Yeah, there's a bunch of shots, and then you can immediately shoot a bunch of shots again.
Well, right. Wouldn't that be a good thing with Terminators and then you charge multiple units?
I mean, it can be, but, you know, the shooting output on Terminators is going to be a lot, especially with the bolter drill beta rule for sure. But at the same time, you know, you're looking at this stratagem that only is effective in the shooting phase. And so though Terminators can definitely spread the love and shoot at several units and then charge another one, this is really meant for units like Obliterators and Havocs, really first and foremost. I would say a tertiary strategy would definitely be to utilize Endless Cacophony with, you know, Noise Marines or Terminators. But again, there's a primary and a secondary here.
Yeah, fair enough. And it would go pretty well with Havocs under the benefit of the new Prescience. Warp charge 7, add 1 to hit rolls for all models in that unit until the start of your next psychic phase. Or the other new one, which Warp Sight Plea. It looks like they have a duplicate version, essentially, of Prescience. Although Prescience does affect melee attacks, while Warp Sight only affects ranged weapons.
Warp Sight is one of those new prayers.
It's the demon one.
Right. We talked about it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, now, what could be really effective with Endless Cacophony and Havocs in particular would be to utilize things like, you know, you prescience one unit, you can maybe do the warp plea to another unit in order to spread the love with +1 to hit if you have multiple Havoc units. But it gets even sexier when you can hide the Havocs in Rhinos, especially when you don't have a blade of wounds for the Havocs. But, you know, you can have a unit of, you know, 4 las cannons and then 2 units of 4, you know, chain guns. And that's 2 anti-horde and 1 anti-tank. And where need be, you know, you can, if you fight against a guy with knights, you know, that's, you can utilize Endless Cacophony and you can go, okay, you know, these las cannons that hit on 2 wound on 3s, you know, here's 4 shots into a knight. Oh, that didn't kill him. Well, let's shoot 4 more shots into him, you know, or.
And don't forget, veterans of the Long War, that would give you a 6+ up against going to give you additional hit on a 6+ to wound against Imperial models, isn't it?
In melee.
However, I always forget about that.
Schwartz, you're off on that one, but here's one that they probably should talk about, or that they, you know, anyone planning to run a lot of Havocs should probably bring a Chaos Lord, because if you run either of these buffs on a unit of Havocs, they'll be hitting on 2s, rerolling 1s to hit.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Super sexy.
So, and then with, you know, like you guys said, Endless Cacophony, you're going to be able to, you know, have one of those units shoot again on the same thing. So, hey, Schwartz, is that better or worse than what you used to run? Just curious.
That's better than what I used to run, simply because I could run 3 devs. Actually, no, I got to reroll it to hit. But I was hitting on 3s with the exception of certain models that I was giving them double shots with the Cherub and then +1 to hit with the Sergeant. So it's overall, I would say it's better, but you need more support characters to make it work, because you need the pre-science to go off. You need the prayer to go off. Endless Cacophony makes that thing good. So overall, I would say better, but less reliable.
Yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of possibility here for a really cheap but also, you know, hard-hitting first-turn firebase.
Yeah, I mean, I just love that Havocs are now toughness 5 for no reason whatsoever.
Well, it does make them. It does mean that they're likely not going to have a lot the ability to take ablative wounds.
They don't. It's been
which is one thing we were worried about.
Well, it's not that they might not be able to.
Are
it's not at all.
Oh, it is set. They are 5-man.
They are minimum 5, okay, maximum 5.
So yeah, like Alex was alluding to, you're going to want to stick them in like a rhino, two squads in a rhino to save their buckets from being shot at turn one. And since they ignore the movement penalty for their heavy weapons, that's perfectly sound strategy.
And it's definitely, you know, I do have to ask, I asked last week and we weren't sure. Is this starting to sound like you can run maybe not a guard equivalent shooting army, but a fairly dominant Chaos shooting army?
I mean, you could potentially run a Chaos Brigade and see where that gets you. I struggled to see because most of the units didn't get the updates that they needed. It's picking.
Well, we say that without actually seeing the codex.
The reviews are coming out. It came out last week. Only half the units, like those that are discussing now. Basically, the new units that got new models are those that got reviews, that get updated rules. So, like, Mauler Fiends stay the same, Forge Fiends stay the same. That's the unfortunate part.
Yeah, well, we already reviewed that, too. That's,
There's potential for Chaos to go from, say, lower tables, Chaos Space Marines specifically, to go from lower tables to, say, mid tables, especially comboing with Chaos Soup. You're going to see more battalions, especially the Red Corsairs, because that is a super sexy faction ability. I mean, just my God.
Yeah, the ability to advance and then charge, not to mention a lot of extra command points and the more where they came from stratagem, basically, you know, another version of without number or send in the next wave.
I mean, could you in theory use that on the Havocs that are Red Corsairs with a Marcus Lanesh?
I'm so sorry. Say that again.
I don't see why not. What Red Corsairs, right? So they can take Havocs with Marcus Lanesh. So why couldn't you do the endless? Let's look up the ruling, more where that came from.
Endless Cacophony?
No, yeah. Hear me out, right? So more where that came from. Oh, Space Marines. Never mind. I take it back. It's not Havocs. Well, would that apply to do the Havocs got to have the Chaos Space Marine keyword? Or is it just
100% Heretic Astartes and Power Armor? Yeah, they are infantry, bikes, and dread and hell brutes keep Legion tactics. So yeah.
I think, Mike, I think it's only
the actual
Chaos Space Marine units.
Oh, that's disappointing. Because Heroes, I was thinking, you take out the Havocs and you can bring them back for 3 CP.
Right, and that's where I think the problem is that's Havocs, whereas Chaos Space Marines is a specific unit choice.
It's still more
effective. Yeah, which is unfortunate, because
The Chaos Space Marine units, because you can have them in like a squad of 20 and then bring 19 more models back if one guy's left.
Horde Chaos Space Marines.
Oh my god. Yeah, I guess. Okay. We'll see.
And also,
we'll see
it looks
about
like
that
one. They deep strike when they come in. So you're not running in from board edge. You're setting up wholly within 6 inches of the edge and more than 9 inches from any enemy models.
They're basically outflanking, yeah. So you can put them anywhere you want. But that's the same wording for all of these comeback stratagems. It's the same thing.
Right, but they're not bringing back Bolter Drill Marines.
Well, yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, and Alex has a good point. You can bring back a 20-man unit of Chaos.
Right. That's why I'm actually kind of impressed with this. It's a significant blob, but I mean, really, what, you know, why not bring this instead of the now standard 20-man unit of Bloodletters?
Good point. Touche. I mean, I still think like some of the lists that we discussed at the GTs would go through a 20-man Chaos Space Marine unit pretty quickly, but it's
pretty quickly is a strong word, especially if they're in cover. That's a lot of T4 with a 2-up.
Okay. Good point.
I mean, you could essentially set that unit at midfield, string it out across the whole thing as a blocker, and just go, you better kill the whole thing, because if there's one left, I'm just going to do it all over again.
Oh my god, that would be so annoying.
I mean, and there's nothing saying you can't do this multiple times. It doesn't have a once-a-game limit.
Yeah, no, that's true. Alex, with the Havocs, you can do Veterans of the Long War, the stratagem. I was not thinking about Death to the False Emperor. My apologies. But that's +1 to wound also on the Havocs with the last cannons.
Yeah, so it'd be hitting on twos, wounding on twos against a knight.
A knight. So that's pretty
sick. All you have to do is you got to spread your damage output and make sure that you can have your knight opponent, you know, bust their nut for rotate ion shields on the unit that you don't want to hit with the last cannons, then you just make the other one force those five ups on the other one.
Yeah.
What you're hoping is that they have multiple knights. So the first one you batter, make it spend the ion shield, and then you turn to the other one and just and double tap it.
Exactly. That's exactly what Alex was alluding to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just trying to simplify the language because not everybody's as smart as you guys.
Trust me. We're not that smart. But there's potential here. It's just I think other units need the rework for the Code of Space Marine to go fully back into fruition.
We haven't seen all of the other
touche.
All of the other Legion traits, so we don't know what they're gonna do to things like the Mauler Fiend or the
Heldrake.
Heldrake, thank you very much. It's been so long since I've seen one of those, I forgot what they're called. We are still kind of playing with bits and pieces of all the information. Yeah. And we do look forward to when they give the whole codex to the public and we can do a full review and see what we think of it all. But let's go ahead and wrap it up, guys. I think we've covered, more than a few events and a lot of interesting lists. I do want to again give a shout out to Boris Mishev, picking up second at the Into the Hellstorm and then winning the Gibraltar GT with his Drukhari and the exact same list. So back-to-back weekends, that's called putting in work. So for Michael, Vincent, and Alex, we are signing off. Thank you so much for listening. Please do check in with our AOS and X-Wing podcasts. Gentlemen, let's say goodnight.
All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.